This is Bridget Broyle. I am recording at Unitarian Church North on April 23rd, 2022. It is about 20 after 1 on a Saturday afternoon, and I'm here with two church members of the church. I'd like to ask you to say your name and to spell it, and just let me know how you'd like me to refer to you.
Okay. Officially, I'm L, first initial Joy Schroeder, S-C-H-R-O-E-D-E-R, and I've always been called by my middle name, Joy.
I'm Carol, excuse me. I'm Carol Podlock, C-A-R-O-L, P-A-W-L-A-K, and Carol is fine.
And I'd just like for the understanding that you've agreed to talk to me today about Unitarian Church North. The first thing I'd like to ask is how long you've been a member and what made you decide to become a member at Unitarian Church North?
I became a member with my husband in, I think it was February of 1992, so that we've been members for 30 years. What made us join? I wanted to have, we visited the church first when the first Gulf War was going on. I was a nurse and an older mother with a baby that I was nursing, and I wanted to make sure that I had documentation to be considered a conscientious objector. I had heard a rumor that somebody, that the government might start drafting people who had a medical background. My husband wanted to join a church for our children to have some religious education. He was, he's a recovering Catholic. And, so we chose this church. We attended an orientation session, and I remember Pat, Mom Lovely, saying, "You can join this church if you just want to have contacts with people who have a like mind. You can have social contacts here." And that convinced me. I just thought, you know, we had been part of a peace group, and that was kind of our church before a church. And then I thought, you know, that'd be nice. We lived in West Bend and had lived in Milwaukee before. We had more of a liberal community down there, so it was nice for us to be having contacts of people who were like-minded here.
I joined the church in February 1999. Our minister then was fairly new, and I had attended the church and really liked the services. But before that, I had been a member of Unitarian Church West, and before that I had been a Lutheran. And when I began actually exploring other denominations and attended the Unitarian Church West in Brookfield, there was a lay-led service, and the message from that service was that wherever you are on your spiritual journey, that's okay. And I said to myself, this is where I belong, that's why I'm still here at this Unitarian Church.
How would you describe Unitarian Church North to someone who didn't know anything about it or had never heard of Unitarian Universalists?
First, you have to say that a UU religion, a UU church, stands for freedom of religion. UU started church as a Christian church, but at this point not many UUs would call themselves Christian, but in a fundamentalist way, except they might practice living as a Christian might say in small letters, Christian. Anyway, our members are dedicated to social justice and democracy, and we've been asked several times as the church evolves if we want to change our vision statement, and nobody on the board time and again wants to change it, that UCN provides a light of religious freedom in the warmth of a caring community. It just seems like we base our programming on that.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. How would you describe Unitarian Church North to someone who'd never heard of the church and wasn't at all familiar with Unitarian Universalist Unitarian? It's so hard to keep those straight.
I would describe us as a place where anyone would feel welcome. There are no restrictions on what you can believe. That doesn't mean necessarily that we believe anything and everything. It's a place that, for me, coming from another background, I feel like I can keep on learning and growing, and I can change. After reviewing some of the religious background that I had, I have changed. So that's what is open to anyone who comes: acceptance and the ability to grow in the way that you want to.
Tell me about one of your favorite memories.
I have so many. Let's see. Well, I was allowed to organize a barn dance a couple of times. So that was one of my favorite memories, actually. We had a caller and a little ensemble, and we did some contra dances, and we had a meal. We did it twice, I think. But so one of my favorite memories included Carol and her husband in their 80s following a dance that was very rapid. Keeping up with it just fine. It was just wonderful. Family kind of fun. Another good memory for me is we had a small organization of parents with children, young children, that was organized by a couple of the members, the mothers. It was called PATAI, Parents of Toddlers and Infants. And we later called it UUFO, UU Families Organization. We had, organized an outing once a month or something. You know, like we went to the zoo, we did some sledding, we had maple syrup at our house breakfast, and it was just great for parents to be able to. And then my favorite memory is when I had cancer treatment, there was a person on the pastoral care committee, Carol Broman, that organized volunteers for our family. We got meals for weeks. We got child care at the drop of a hat when I had to go to the hospital. We got financial support. We got emotional support. It was just wraparound services, and really helped us get through.
Interesting, Joy. I remember that that group of parents, Potai. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us called it Potty because mm-hmm. there were a lot of little kids in the group. Actually, some of my memories when I look back on them were some of the organizing that we tried to do that was challenging at times. When the United States went to war in Iraq, there was a group of us that wanted to take a stand for peace. And I was surprised at the time that not everyone was supportive of that. But looking back on it, I think it was a time to grow for everyone. Other things about my life here, I was very active on the Social Justice Committee, and it's part of the reason that I'm a Unitarian, because Unitarians are very active in social justice. So there were a lot of moments there that I felt like we were doing something important and making a difference. But our most recent memory is last spring. I was recognized at our annual meeting for the different committees and the different projects I've been involved in all the time that I was here. And I think it was because I resigned from the Social Justice Committee, people started looking and saying, I guess she's done a few things here. So that was a very nice moment.
You've both been members for a really long time. Can you tell me more about how you became a member, what the process is, and what signing the membership book was like, and if that's how that works, and if that's a ceremony, or what is involved with that?
When my husband and I joined, there was nothing special, I don't think. Like I said, we had gone to an orientation meeting. Now they have classes, two or three classes, I think, after church for members, Path to Membership, they called it. New to UU, they've called it. I'm not sure what it's being called now. We just said we were interested in becoming members. We signed the book. Somebody grabbed a couple. It was an older couple. Irwin, I can't remember his name. He was a retired doctor, and his wife, Emily, and they witnessed us signing the book. And then you're expected to make a pledge shortly thereafter. Now I know the board has, in the bylaws, I think, in order to be a voting member, you have to have made a donation, like a pledge of... There's no specified amount. You just have to have made a pledge. So that's all there is to it. I have participated a couple of times in those meetings where they have new people come, and that was rewarding for me to be able to go and say, you know, what committee I've been on, or how rewarding, and what special religious education classes we have here.
Could you repeat the question?
Of course.
I'm involved in this.
That's okay. When you became a member, how did you... There's a signing of the book, and I'd like to understand more about what the membership book is, and how the process works to become a member, and if there's any kind of ceremony or around that book signing, what that involves.
When I joined the church, I had come from another Unitarian church, as I said, and In both churches, there was a new members orientation. I don't think that's exactly what it was called, but I do remember in both churches that the minister, who I think was leading the group, suggested that we put ourselves on a continuum, just physically put ourselves close to one end of a line, which was belief in the triune God, and the other end of the line was atheist. So we kind of wandered around a little bit and then found our spot. And I was surprised that I was closer to the triune God than anybody else. But there were people all along that continuum. I do remember signing the book here, and I don't remember that there was a witness when I signed it. And I think that I'm not sure that the book is still used.
I think so.
Is it? Okay. So that was my experience.
And that was kind of my follow-up question. Where is this mythical book? Do either of you know, or
no,
is it?
I have no idea. I haven't seen it since we signed it.
Let me have you repeat that.
Yeah, I don't know where the book is, and there's probably more than one book because it got filled up by now. But I haven't seen it since we signed it.
Okay. I haven't seen it either. I don't know where it is. I do remember, I think it's part of that book that has some of the original
founders,
the original members, but also the original reason for our being, our mission statement. That's what I'm trying to say. And it was very different than a mission statement would be today. It was much more traditional Christian message.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Changing gears a little bit, what is the funniest thing that you've ever, what do you think the funniest thing is that's happened here, either to you or that you know about?
I'm not one of those people that remembers jokes or anything like that. So I don't know, but first thing I thought of was we had a Halloween party and Charlie Keenan came dressed in a bee costume. He's a beekeeper and he now runs Beevangelism. He's really into teaching people about bees and keeping them going. So that was really funny. He's kind of a round guy and he looked like a bumblebee. But I have to mention our people who are regular volunteers here, Dean Johnson and Dan Lusk, are funny every day. They just make witty comments constantly. And then other people try to keep up with them and be funny also. So, you know, it really, our church has been through a lot, and to have these volunteers stay with the church has been quite challenging. And I thought at some point we would break down in our relationships, but we're still supporting each other and keeping the church going. So I think that humor helps so much.
I'm not sure it's funny, but it's interesting to me that when I was doing a review for the history of our church, during the time that the church was being built, we did not have an elevator, and an elevator shaft was being added. And during the time the building was happening, there was someone who had committed a crime and ended up hiding in the newly built elevator shaft. And I'm not sure how that... So I'm not sure how he was found, but no one was injured. The police became aware that he was there, and he was captured.
certainly made it famous. You mentioned, Joy, some of the challenging things, and we talked earlier about Guild Church's vote for the minister. Can you talk about some of the challenging things or the vote with for Guild Church as minister?
Sure.
Well, first of all, I want to say, as long as we have been members of the church, and until recently, there's been pressure for people to give money to the church because the building is so expensive. So when Gil offered to be the minister, and he offered to be unpaid, then there was just not really clear communication about what his qualifications were. He, you know, acted as a minister in the meantime while we were looking, while we were hoping to get a minister. He gave us sermons for free, and they were good. I thought I voted yes for his come to our church, but after the whole thing was finished, I learned that there was something about his
qualifications.
Divinity, his qualifications, yeah. And he had attended divinity school, but he wasn't totally approved, I think, for ordination. There was something in his evaluations that was not great, and our director of religious education at the time, Trudy, there was some reason that she didn't like him, and I learned later that she thought he was putting his nose in every committee and kind of wanting to tell her what to do, and she was already a minister of religious education, so she wanted to do her own thing. And there was a communication that went out, a letter that went out to everybody in the congregation that was really not clear at all about there was some problem with him, and it didn't really state what it was. So after he didn't get voted in, then there was a discussion about really when you call a minister, it should be unanimous or very close to unanimous, 80%, 90%, whatever. And that wasn't happening for him. And then we had to have an interim minister come first for 1 year, and then he stayed for 2 years. And he had meetings, like neighborhood meetings. He would find this group of people that lived in this area and meet with us and try to kind of smooth over what had happened, and that helped. But really, one person in our neighborhood group kind of explained to me what had happened with better clarity than anybody else had. And then he dated somebody who was in our church or who was in another UU church, which is a no-no, and so.
Sorry, who is he?
Robert Flanders.
So the person in the
person was
neighborhood
was
that
intern,
was...
interim
okay.
minister.
Okay.
So that was funny. But then we called another minister, and we went through a process, the proper process for the one that's approved by the Unitarian Universalist Association, to get Elena Rigg, and she was very beloved. I, for one, was a little taken aback when we got a woman minister. You know, it's kind of like I had always had men doctors and men ministers, and it's like I was surprised at myself, but she was just amazing. She was really good. I mean, not every single sermon was inspiring, but very many were. So then we had the whole conflict over Reverend Julie. When Reverend Julie came, She was called by a committee, and there was a proper search committee, but she, right away I noticed that she didn't include any congregational response, and that was one of the things I liked the best about coming to this church, is sometimes the minister, like Elena Rigg, would say after her sermon, she would say, well, you don't have, this is a church where you don't have to agree with what the minister says. So, you know, if you have a question or a comment you want to make, we have a few minutes to do that. And Reverend Julie didn't do that at all. So I asked somebody on the worship committee, you know, why isn't this happening anymore? And she says, well, you better talk to the reverend about this. And the other thing was, she wanted to be called the reverend. You know, whereas our ministers before that always went by their first name. So I went and had an appointment with her, and she just said, oh, you know, you get the same people coming up in congregational response, and they can yammer on and on. And it's been, and then I said, well, is this recommended by the national church, that churches don't have congregational response anymore? And she said, oh, yeah. And then I asked around and found out that there were other people that really missed it, and that it was still going on in other churches. And then there was a couple of personal conflicts. A couple of people had personal conflicts with her, and it wasn't resolved very well. They made the board wrote a covenant about how churches should work out their own problems, and we called in somebody from the Midwest UU group, and it just wasn't ever resolved. And then a few of us noticed that our membership was decreasing, and we had the recession, and there were other churches that were losing membership at the same time, but it came to a point where we couldn't afford keeping up this large building that had been expanded when Elena was a minister and our membership was growing. And we had to decide between selling the building or letting the minister go and become a lay-led church. So we decided, we had many discussions and decided to let the minister go and break her contract, and that was quite a big ordeal. Had to pay her some kind of severance, I think. So that was so when Gil was not accepted as the minister, you know, there were some people who left and some people who came. Same kind of thing with Reverend Forrest. But since that time, our membership has just been steady, has just been gliding along. But I think with the volunteer efforts of people having our church run as a lay-led church, it has really encouraged people to give more money to the church. It's been more meaningful, I think, for people. So it's been amazing. And then we had retired ministers, and right away after Tony Larson gave a couple of sermons, you know, I was on co-chairperson of the worship committee, people would come up and say, oh, you've got to get this guy as our minister. And I thought the same thing. And so I approached him after a couple of times and said, you know, would you consider, you know, being a minister for us? And then we did this whole discussion about, could we get a part-time minister? You know, could we afford at least a part-time minister? And hiring a part-time minister have to go through the same process as having a full-time minister? And so we decided it would be possible for him to decide on his own if he wanted to come to our church as a part-time minister. So that really has helped at least keep our membership steady. We've had, you know, a few people leave, a few people come, but our problem now is we don't have enough young people to keep a church going. So Sorry to take all that time.
It's okay.
I think from Joy's comments, you can hear a theme that I think is present in maybe other Unitarian churches too, that the minister is not necessarily worshipped like they are in other churches. They are seen as being very human, and it does develop sometimes factions within the church, people that support a minister or don't support a minister. I think you and I, Joy, might not have the same perception mm-hmm. of the ministers. Elena was a very good minister and well-loved. So well-loved that I think she could not be criticized. And I found that sometimes that she didn't meet my needs. So, there were other times in the church that things that were difficult to deal with were not centered around the minister. But as I said earlier, making a decision about whether or not we would stand for peace rather than going into the Iraq War. And that it took a while for us to decide. It took a number, I think maybe 3 years of annual meeting decisions about what it would take for what percentage of the congregation it would take to make a statement, a public statement. And it came pretty close to the percent that it would take to call a minister. I think close to 90%, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly.
80 or 90%, something yeah. like that.
Yeah.
And there was just a couple of people who didn't want to agree with it.
Yeah. So, having said that, on the really positive side, when we were kind of forced to become a lay-led church, we came together, and I guess sometimes out of conflict and out of difficult times, better times emerge, and that happened because we had people that came forward to be really good leaders in this congregation. And I remember the first meeting after Reverend Julie had to leave, that two people up at an annual meeting came forward on that day and said, okay, we will work together and we will be the leaders.
Two women,
right.
Co-presidents.
And so we had co-presidents for maybe 3 years, and now we're down to one president again. I think one of the things that I'd like to say about being a member of this church, and probably of any church, but I feel like I've been a member of 4 or 5 different churches because the people change, the issues change, the times change, and even though I've been here 20-some years. I've been a member of a few different churches here.
That's really interesting. On a more positive note, what's your favorite thing about this church? I mean, it could be people, it could be events, but what is it that you love most about the church?
Yeah, for me, it's the community. And I don't know about Carol, but for me, I live with my husband, and he's a member here too. And he started working with the building committee before we were members. He only makes friendships. He only makes social contacts with people that he does volunteer work with. And he has the building committee they call it a play group at this point, and it's all guys. There have been women in the building committee, but at this point it's all guys, a couple of young guys, but mostly older guys. And they love having projects to do because they can get together. But the community here is special. Since we have, a UU church doesn't have a creed or a dogma, we have principles. And it's more like guidelines. I just feel that's so much respect for a person. You know, anybody who goes to any church, they don't follow the dogma all the time. They have varying degrees of believing in this or that. And here, it's just openly said, you know, you're on a journey and you do what you want to. And so we kind of support each other's questioning and doubting and growth. And that's what I like about being at this church.
I think getting to know the people and finding good friends here is an important part of the church. But some of the auctions, the fundraising events, have really been fun. We've had an outside auctioneer hired, but we've also had people from the congregation who lead the auction. And as Joy said earlier, we have some people who just have a great sense of humor. I don't know, Brian Mitchell is one who's not here now, but he used to do a really good job of leading the auction. It was a special night. Other events, I guess, that I remember as special is the 50th anniversary evening when we had a really special dinner and special entertainment.
What do you think UCN contributes to the community, either Mequon or the greater Milwaukee area? How does it fit in? How would you like the community to view it?
Do you want to go first this time?
I'll always remember a member who has passed on. When I was early a member of the Social Justice Committee, she was on the Social Justice Committee, and there were some questions about our beginnings and why we were here in the middle of Ozaukee County. And her response, because she was one of the founding members, Phyllis, I can't remember her last name.
Yes.
But, her response was, well, a lot of us knew that we needed to have some progressive liberal presence in the middle of Ozaukee County. Mm-hmm. And that's I think, what we do contribute to this, to our community. Also, I'm really proud, in that, because I was part of it, that we made a decision probably 15 years ago to give half of our offering every Sunday to either local, state, national, or international organization that we believed was making a difference in the world. And carrying forward our values. So I think initially people thought, how can we do that? Because we're always short of money. But we had heard and read that offerings tended to increase when people chose to do that. And that's been true. I think that's a contribution that we make that's important.
I'll agree with that, the Share the Plate program. I remember stating at some meeting that I thought our church should have something that we give money to. They're always worried about raising money for the church. But other churches have missions in other countries, or they have a project going on in the inner city or whatever, and we didn't have that. I thought, you know, what does this religion really stand for? So I was really pleased when one of our presidents or the board suggested that, and we really supported a lot of different groups. It kind of helps to make you informed about what groups are around, besides the, you know, peace and environmental justice groups we get offers or asking for our money daily. I would say that's what's unique for our community. We have offered information and involvement in social justice issues. We've had movies here or speakers, you know, on social justice issues, not only for the sermon, but also just for, like, workshops. We had a workshop on transgender one time that was really good. And this is a place where youth that are growing up with liberal families can find support. Like, our family lives in West Bend. It's a very conservative community, and I would say our daughter didn't have many peers that had any kind of exposure to liberal ideas until she came here. The religious education for children is so different. Like I said, we don't have dogma and creed, and we don't have catechism and whatever those things are called in the Catholic Church. But we have a coming-of-age program that helps the children look at big questions. Where do I go when I die? What is God? And they ask them to make a statement of what their religious beliefs are now, knowing that they may change. And then we have a comprehensive sexuality program that says that gay people are normal. And so it's something that people can't get anywhere else.
You touched on the lay people who sometimes give sermons, and that you had 3 years with lay-led sermons. Can you go into a little more detail about how that works and how the person is chosen to give the sermon?
I can speak to that. I joined the worship committee, which is now, again, called the Sunday Service Committee, just as we were having the last days of Reverend Julie. I wanted to know how it worked, and I wanted to contribute speakers. So I kind of got talked into being a scheduler. Somebody might suggest somebody as a speaker. They've heard that speaker before. They went to a workshop or whatever. Or they've heard them on public radio or something. And I, being a scheduler, I would call people that I knew in the peace movement and environmental movement and ask them to give a sermon. And we give them a template of our order of service, you know, let them know that they're expected to do a 15 or 20 minute talk, and the rest is stuff that we do standard. And we give them an honorarium, and there's guidelines for the honorariums. We pay more for a UU minister that's retired or current, borrowed from somebody else's church. We pay a little more for people who are super experts in their field, or and then we pay less for people who just are the head of a group or something. And then sometimes we alter the order of service a little bit sometimes we allow them to include music that's meaningful to them, that's still spiritual. Ask them to do a spiritual message, not just information. And so that's how that works. So have you ever been involved in getting a speaker?
I guess I understood you to ask also about individual members who became speakers.
Yes.
And we've had a few of those. I remember Paul at one time has a strong background in social work and working in the jail system. And so he had a talk. I wouldn't call it a sermon, a talk about that. We have a professor and a few, I think, amongst us. Amanda has given talks. I think one was on Buddhism. I didn't give a whole talk, but I remember at one time Reverend Elena asked people to respond to the statement, how do you wrestle with God, or how have you wrestled with God? And I took a stab at that and sent her an email and said, these are some of my wrestlings with God. And she asked me to read them on a Sunday morning. So I feel like that's really encouraged in our congregation. And I, by the way, have kept that because I keep wrestling with God.
I didn't realize that was part of your question, but we have had members do services. I just asked another one who is a past member to repeat his sermon on health equity, and he's going to do that. And I gave a couple of sermons. It took me years to write them. I asked for help from Drew Kennedy, who's a retired minister for the First Church, and he didn't want to spend the time to do that, but I got some support for my first sermon from a couple of ministers, and Tony's open to that. And we've had ministers who have had little class on how to write a sermon kind of thing. It was really very, rewarding to write a couple of sermons and hear about it afterwards, get some feedback. What else?
Did you include congregational feedback on yours?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. The first one I did was, I called it Reflections rather than a sermon. It was about, there was a time when I co-facilitated a class called Cakes for the Queen of Heaven. It's a UU curriculum about ancient spirituality, women's spirituality, about how, you know, the deities in ancient times were women, and archaeologists have decided that, you know, women were way more in leadership positions back then. And there was no wars. There was no mass murders back then. Anyway, I had my reflections on that program, how meaningful that was for me. And then I gave another sermon on embracing feminism, about how feminism is for everyone. And I had a couple of guys come up to me afterwards and said they expected me to blast them, and I didn't. You know, they were really grateful for my insights. So that was really cool. Yeah.
Well, my last question would be, where would you like to see UCN in 10 years?
As Carol alluded to, you know, every so often our church has evolved in a different way, in a different direction, and it depends some on the minister and it depends some on the community. So what we've said lately in trying to get more members and more people with young people, with children, that's what I would like, is for more families with children to again come back to the church and keep the evolution of UU-ism going. Also, I would like to have more emphasis on culture change rather than religiosity, I guess. I think that our culture in general is all about competition and domination, one person over another, and I just think our church could participate in helping to change our culture to be more empathetic or more egalitarian, or and I would like to see some kind of connection with Black churches, or with, you know, people working against racism. Another thing is, I think that our music has kind of diminished a bit in our church. We at one time had, you know, lots of good music performances, and I would like to get back to that. Our church really now is aging people, and so something needs to give us some energy and some it's going to be needed to be changed in a way that the young people want it to go.
I will be 95, and maybe I'll be here, and maybe I won't. But I hope that we have more young people. That I think they're middle school and high school people. It seems like in many congregations, it takes one or two kids who are really interested that bring in other kids, and we don't have a very large. I'm not maybe up to date on that right now, but I don't think we have a very large religious education group in middle school and high school. So I would like to see that. I'd like to see the families that are here grow and bring in other families, because I think we do. I'd like to see our numbers increase, and we've talked about that a lot. I'd like to see our presence in the community in something like the homeless. We've supported the homeless in Ozaukee County. In fact, we're kind
family
of in organizing and in getting Family Promise off the ground. I'd like to see that us continue to support it even more. I'd like to see it that we don't need it. So I just like to see us grow and change in positive directions, and continue to be to make our offerings to all kinds of important organizations.
I'm ending the recording with about 30 to 40 seconds of silence. It helps with the helps with the recording later. But while I do that, while we just sit here for silence, think about anything I haven't asked you that you really wanted to share, and we'll go back to that in a little bit. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
One of your questions on your list was, how did we deal with the pandemic? So I would like to talk about that. We didn't skip a beat with the pandemic. There was, you know, the lockdown in Wisconsin, and then I think we had one more service in person, and then the next service was online, was by Zoom, and that was thanks to Jackie. Jackie was our director of religious education at the time, and a young enough woman to know how to deal with the technology. So she had a Zoom account, and you know, could help get the church service done. We would have the guest speaker record their message, and the worship assistant would record their parts, and the music would be recorded and put it all together. It was quite the production, but she really helped with that. And then some point we started having what we called hybrid services, like somebody would be here at the church without an audience. So we would have the small team of the worship assistant and the minister, and I don't remember, I think we might have had recorded music then, but anyway, we were able to, with doing it by Zoom, we were able to continue our coffee hour. Like coffee hour is, you know, another, a wonderful social time after church. So people could be on Zoom and contribute to discussions or conversations a little bit before church and probably about a half an hour after church. And then we got a camera to do the hybrid services, and then we got a different camera and a TV. Now we're going to get a huge TV screen. And so we've continued with a hybrid service, being people coming back to church at first with masks, and now masks are optional. And then we're having there's so many people who come. We have so many computers that are counted online, and so many members that are counted in person. And I think it's been amazing. We did kind of, she says she's not burned out, but the person who took over being the co-chair of the worship committee after myself, she was really good at the computer stuff. So she would coordinate, you know, the photographer, the videographer, and the music recordings, and she would be in charge of putting that all together. And now it's the office manager that does that. It's quite a lot of work, but I'm really proud that our church has been able to go through the changes. Right away, they developed a committee a subcommittee of the board. It's called the Subcommittee, Reopening Subcommittee. and it includes several people. You know, there's like a nurse, and there's they research the information from the CDC and from the local public health numbers, and they've gotten information from our church's insurance company, you know, on risk management, and they really weigh everything about what is safe. For the longest time, the National UU Church Organization recommended that we don't open, that we don't reopen and have people come in person to church. But we started because we thought with masks, wearing masks and having air purifiers, and, you know, we just figured we would be. And at first we did a survey and found out that there were, you know, all the adults were vaccinated, and, you know, we really felt as if it would be safe. So that's been amazing.
One thing that I don't think we talked about that you're, I was just reminded of, that some burnout has been a problem, and one of the people that was very much involved in getting us online and getting our Zoom services established, I think there was some burnout there, because I haven't seen her for a while. And I with other positions in the church, I've noticed that after a while, people who have been in a position for a long time just don't show up for a while, or don't come back. So that's a concern. Also, I really would like to talk about a little bit about MICA. The Social Justice Committee in the church is associated with Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Aligned for Hope. They've been in the community since the mid-80s, I think, and they've done some really important work.